Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, as many of our listeners know, I'm sure not just our listeners, but people all across the country realize that the elections are coming up very, very quickly. And as you know, elections have consequences, sometimes very far-reaching consequences. We want to talk about a couple of those on the broadcast today. First up, we're going to speak with Emily Bells about a couple of things that take place that are a little bit more behind the scenes when someone is elected to office. Specifically, in this case, we're looking at, first of all, what takes place with the president and the judicial appointments that he makes. A lot of people don't think much about those things. They don't get as much airtime and don't show up on the news cycle quite as often as some of the other things that take place in Washington. But the president has been filling all of these judicial positions a little bit under the radar of people noticing what's been taking place. We want to talk about those items. And then also another thing that's been taking place politically that, again, just doesn't normally make the major headlines, the major national headlines, and that's what takes place in at the state level in the state houses. Emily Bells from World Magazine has written about both of those two things, and so we want to talk with her first about those particular issues. Second half of the program today, we want to talk about the immigration issue, and more specifically about the president apparently just about to go ahead and announce this very sweeping illegal immigration amnesty program that is about to take place. There's been a report now about the ID cards that have been ordered. They ordered the material for them. So you've got to order, you know, make a contract or create a contract with a printer and then buy the material for the cards and so forth, and then actually have the cards, have a contract ready for the cards to be produced. Well, turns out that up to 43 million of these cards have been, the government, the federal government has contracted with a business and put out a request for a proposal for up to 43 million of these things to be produced. So the thinking is that the president is going to do very widespread amnesty program shortly after the election. Some are saying the day after the elections. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that with Ira Melman from the from FAIR, the Federation for, American Immigration Reform, I think. We'll talk to them on the second half of the broadcast, and so stay tuned for that. First up, Emily Bells. Emily, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks for having me.
Emily, a couple of your stories there, very interesting. Why don't we start with the one entitled Lifetime Achievements? The subtitle of that says, The Underestimated Executive Power, Judicial Appointments. Now, I was just talking about the overestimated executive power in what he's thinking of doing on the immigration front, but here is something else that is also fundamentally changing the landscape of the American political system. Tell our listeners a little bit about what's taking place related to judicial appointments.
Yeah, so I think one of the most important things the president does is appoint judges, because those judges have lifetime appointments, so they'll be there a long time after President Obama leaves office. So when President Obama took office, most of the courts were majority Republican appointees. And now, you know, we're several years into first and second term of President Obama, and most of the courts are majority Democratic appointees. Mm. That's a huge change and has really big implications for rulings on gay marriage and everything else that the courts handle.
Mm-hmm. As we've been seeing most recently and complaining about most recently, there's been a tremendous amount of legislating from the bench. There's been a lot of judicial activism that has taken place, and we've been looking for, you know, what can we do to address this? Well, this report that you've put out here really shows that we've got an uphill battle on this, because the president, even when he's swapping out, your article says, one Democratic-appointed judge for another, he's still really extending the Democratic hold on these judgeships for a decade and maybe even beyond, right?
Yeah, exactly. And right now he's able to put in more extreme judges, judges who might have more political backgrounds and wouldn't be able to pass a bipartisan Senate. But right now he can pass extreme judges because the Senate has gotten rid of the 60-vote supermajority needed to confirm these judges.
Mm.
So the Democrats can just vote for the judges, and they don't need any Republican support. So that's a big reason why we're seeing a lot more judges who might have controversial backgrounds.
Well, there's that the real significance of that vote, referred to as the nuclear option. I think some of our listeners may be familiar with that. They may have thought that it related to the arms race or something when you hear it, but it was actually a term that was used in the Senate as to whether you needed the supermajority to be able to vote for some of these nominations. And some people may have thought, well, this is really no big deal. But now that we see that the removal of that standard really has had major consequences now, because the president has been able then to fill these other judicial positions with very radical judges. And so now, even when we pass something, we see in the states, even when we work with the system, the legislative system, to get something, a bill produced and then voted on, these judges just simply override whatever we've done. And so this is extremely problematic, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is a system of checks and balances here. I mean, the Supreme Court does have final say on a lot of these issues, but you know, the Supreme Court only handles not even 1% of the cases, so it's a really big deal who the federal judges are, because they handle 99% of the cases, and they're the final word on 99% of the cases.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't hear about them a lot in the media, but they really do have a lot of power.
And as we just saw with the Supreme Court, basically by even not taking a case, it wasn't a decision from the Supreme Court that came down. It was a non-decision. It was no action taken by the court, which had the effect of leaving in place then what was done by one of these lower courts that we're talking about. And that had the effect then of basically allowing those lower courts to make very sweeping policy changes, is specifically related to the fact that they could then override the votes that were made by the states, up to 30 states now, I think, with same-sex marriage being legal now in those states. And one of the reasons is because the Supreme Court refused to hear that case, allowing the lower court's decision to stand. So, boy, I think this is big. This is big news. Now, Bush did a number of appointments as well, and in your article you point out that the current president, President Obama, is on pace with what Bush did. But is there any difference between what one was doing and what the other is doing?
Yeah, well, Bush didn't have the nuclear option that we talked about. So his nominees had to be a little bit more pleasing to both sides of the aisle. His nominees were rejected more often than Obama by the Senate, and I think that shows, you know, the fact that he had to work with both Democrats and Republicans because not as many of his nominees got through. So Obama hasn't had to do that in recently. So he can just get it through on a party line vote.
Now give us a couple of cases of what has taken place with some of the Obama nominees and some of the things that they have authored. I think you've got one in the article about the Fourth Circuit ruling where they're striking down a Virginia marriage law, and a couple of other cases related to the contraceptive mandate and so forth. Just give our listeners a couple of instances about, you know, what does this play out, how does this play out in real-life situations?
Yeah, so I think one of the most important cases in recent memory is the case of the D.C. Circuit concerning tax subsidies for insurance. That was a case that really got to the heart of Obamacare. It didn't get as much attention as the Supreme Court case, but a three-judge panel struck down that part of Obamacare, and it's a really important funding mechanism for Obamacare. But the fact that the D.C. Circuit had a majority of Democratic-appointed judges meant that they could decide to hear the case again. Mm. So they overruled the three-judge panel and decided we're going to rehear this case, which essentially means that the Obama administration is going to win their case probably because the majority of the court are Democratic appointees.
Mm. And one of the things that this allows them to do that's different as well is without that 60-vote minimum, it removes a lot of debate about the person that is actually nominated for these positions. So, for instance, one was Pillard that came, one of the Senate confirmed Pillard, who was a former lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP. Why is that such a, why was she so controversial, or why was that appointment so controversial, I should say?
Well, I think the fact that she had an advocacy background, I mean, she wasn't working for the government. She was working for the ACLU and the NAACP. That in itself is controversial because, you know, it puts her on a certain side on several issues. But, I mean, she also is pretty extreme on the abortion issue. She's written law review articles where she is very critical of pro-lifers. She, I think, used the phrase conscription into maternity to talk about pregnancy. So it's, you know, that kind of language would probably sink you if you were in a bipartisan, facing a bipartisan vote. But because she only needed the Democratic support, she was able to get confirmation.
Mm. I guess when we read a story like this, you know, we look and can see the dramatic effect that this will have with the appointment of so many more, you know, radically liberal judges and so forth. What can people do, basically? I mean, can the nuclear option be reinstated if there is a Republican Senate? Can the, which I don't know if that they would do it because, of course, they're going to be like, well, we can get our nominees in now without having, you know, to have the Democrats speak anything about this. And that was one of the things that they warned about when Harry Reid did it. They said, listen, you think now because you're in the majority that this is a good idea, but the day's going to come when you're not in the majority and then you're going to wish that you hadn't done this. So I guess, you know, there's going to be a little bit of political payback here if the Republicans actually take the Senate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Harry Reid pretty much took away the power of the minority. And if the Democrats go into the minority, they're not going to like that. I think that's going to have a big impact on who President Obama can nominate in the future if Republicans do take control of the Senate, because he'll have to get Republican support for judicial nominees, which will really change the nature of who he nominates.
You would think one of the things that they would try to do is, if they think they're going to lose the Senate, is quickly take a vote to put the nuclear option back again just before they head out. You know, they do sneaky stuff like this. What about your other article? You know, this is dealing with the president and these executive orders of nominating and putting these judges, these radical judges, in positions like this. But on the state level, and even more specifically, you highlighted with New York State at the beginning of this article, but you dealt with the idea of what's taking place about on the state level. In New York, it was specifically related to abortion. Speak to us a little bit about that particular article.
Yeah, the state legislative races don't get a lot of coverage, but they're really important. If you think about how little Congress has been able to get done in the last few years, states have been passing stuff right and left. I mean, they're passing all kinds of restrictions on abortion and doing voter ID laws and immigration laws and that kind of thing. So the real action is at the state level, and there are a lot of key races this fall that could determine control of different state chambers. New York's Senate is controlled by Democrats by two seats. So Republicans would like to win outright majority of that chamber this fall. And if they were able to do that, they would be able to block an abortion bill that Governor Cuomo wants to pass next year. So that's just one example of what the stakes are in this fall election.
Speak about that abortion bill and what makes this this new abortion bill even more egregious than what is already on the books there in the state of New York.
Right. New York actually has you're not allowed to do abortions after 20 weeks. And this bill would allow any abortion at any time for the health of the mother. And that, as we know, that's been very broadly defined. So it would expand late-term abortion. It would also remove a lot of criminal penalties that are associated with abortion. So if someone murdered a pregnant woman, right now they would be convicted of two homicides, and that statute would be removed. So it's things like that that would be changed under this new abortion law.
The race for power here at the state level is not lost on in this particular case, on the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. They're saying that with gridlock in Washington, that true progressive reform depends on the states. And so they've been taking a lot of their campaign money and throwing it into these state races, right? Because they feel that they can increase or continue the progressive change in the country here, and they can do it much more effectively at the state level.
Yeah, there's more money in state races than there ever has been in U.S. history. So people are definitely moving more in that direction as they see that there's more action at the state level than there is at the federal level right now in terms of what Congress is doing. But right now the Democrats are spending a lot of money because they're not in a good position at the state level. Republicans control most of state chambers, and historically at midterms when a Democrat is in the president's chair, the Republicans do well. So they have history on their side to do well this election, and Democrats are just spending a lot of money to try and stop that historical trend from happening again.
You were mentioned about that the Republicans have quite a hold. Your article says this, now Republicans hold a 59 to 98 legislative chambers. And so they have a quite a bit of a majority there, and it appears that they're only going to add to that in this new election cycle. So the Democrats are just trying to basically limit those losses as much as possible. Is that the game plan?
Yeah, it doesn't sound too ambitious, but I think that's pretty much what their goal is. I mean, Republicans can certainly screw it up for themselves, too, but it seems like they have a very good position right now in terms of money and in terms of support at the state level. So they're in a good position, and Democrats are just trying to, you know, maybe take some edges in certain places. I mean, the Democrats, even if they win just a few seats in certain states, could flip control of chambers. So every race is important. It's just very, very much a microcosm.
Mm-hmm. Your article is actually entitled "From Augusta to Honolulu," so it's not just in one particular region. You're basically seeing this play out across the country, the continental United States, and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened. The control of state legislatures tends to happen in waves. In 2010, Republicans just swept at the national level and at the state level. Republicans took more control of state legislatures than they had in 50 years. So that was a huge, huge change, and it went back a little bit Democrat in 2012, and then it's supposed to go back more Republican this year. So we see it kind of work in waves at the national level.
One of the parts that people don't realize too, when a particular party is in charge at the state level, is then that party has the ability to control the redistricting lines that are drawn. They have a greater influence in that process, and that becomes very significant as to the people that will then vote in a certain district for a certain candidate. And so the Republicans have really, behind the scenes, I think, been giving a lot of attention to that redistricting, so that this will work in their favor going forward on other elections. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because they took control in 2010, which is right when, states were doing their every 10 years redrawing district lines. So they were able to redraw districts probably in their favor, even though, you know, Republicans promised that they wouldn't do gerrymandering and that kind of thing, but certainly they did in certain cases, because, you know, politicians can't help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think they have been able to solidify their control, and Democrats had gerrymandered for 50 years. So in some cases, you know, they're just redrawing the lines to be more what they should be.
Exactly.
And undoing Democratic gerrymanders.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was a huge development in 2010.
I think the takeaway from the couple of your articles is that elections have consequences. And a lot of people don't realize behind the scenes just all the consequences that it really has. There's a lot of nuances to the political process that are being done behind the scenes outside of the national headlines. And these things are very significant when it comes down to the actual election day and then actually governing afterwards. And I think people just need to be aware that as they're voting for again this year, just remember this isn't just, oh, well, you know, we put this person in office and we'll get to vote somebody else in if we don't like them, you know, 4 years later or something. But they need to realize that this has big consequences on all of these other decisions that are made behind the scenes, and they should keep that in mind. Emily, thank you so much for writing about these things and for joining us today in order to talk about them right here on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, that was Emily Bells. Emily is a writer for World Magazine. You can read both of her stories out at www.worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. And both of those two stories are found there. You'll also find a number of other articles. Last year, I know that, or in previous years, I should say, World Magazine did a great job on the election itself. So it was a great place to go to on election night in order to watch exactly what was taking place across the country. I imagine that's going to be the case this year as well.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.